After Donald Trump was heard bragging about sexual assault on top of all of his other insults against women, did he deserve to be president? You might say no, and yet many of us do excuse the behavior of our favorite artists. Woody Allen, R. Kelly, Sherman Alexie. You can't have it both ways, says the blogger and co-host of the podcast, Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory, Katie Anthony. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
You write that we need to stop thinking of art as transcendent and think of it as a product being sold to us.
That's absolutely right. You know, I think art, because it is so intimate and because it does really inform our personalities and the way that we relate to others, we like to kind of put it in a special category when it comes to our consumption. But at the end of the day, the art that we choose to consume is a product, and the artists that we choose to support are, you know, essentially one-person companies. And so we have to ask ourselves, do I support the business practices of this company that I'm supporting by purchasing their product, sharing their product, recommending their product, clicking on it? All of these acts are basically ways that we buy in to the artist as a seller of product. And It's interesting that we have kind of done the mental gymnastics to make this choice harder than it needs to be, I think.
What do you mean we've made it harder than it needs to be?
Well, because art is personal. You know, for example, I don't buy Hershey's chocolate because Hershey's still sources the vast majority of its cocoa from West Africa, and West African cocoa farms typically use child slave labor. So for me, it's a very easy choice to say, hey, Hershey's, I don't support child slave labor. I'm not going to buy your product. In 2018, it doesn't feel like an egregious ask, to say to a company, you know, you need to factor into your bottom line paying your labor. That doesn't feel like a huge ask to me. And as a consumer, I'm not going to support you until you factor that into your bottom line and you behave ethically. And as an artist,
the literature is giving is something, obviously, as you know, different from a Hershey's Kiss. You're giving up a lot. I mean, you're a fan of the literature of Seattle writer Sherman Alexie.
I'm a huge fan of Sherman Alexie. And it is difficult for me to say, as a consumer of Sherman Alexie's work and as a fan of his, I can't consume it anymore. I can't use this product anymore. And the way that I'm kind of thinking about it is this. Stay with me. It's a little bit of a metaphor.
I'm listening.
So imagine you're shopping for a dining room table. You're looking for the perfect table and you finally find it. And it's just the most beautiful piece of furniture you've ever seen. You love it. You can't wait to put it in your house. And as you look a little bit more closely at the table, you realize that one of the legs of the table is made of ivory. And now it's not an antique. This is a new table. And you have to make the choice. Am I going to buy this table? Knowing what you know about the ivory trade, knowing what you know about what had to happen for this ivory to appear on this table, are you going to buy the table? And for me, that is the way that I think about Sherman Alexie. If we think about his career as being based on, you know, four legs, for example, one of those legs is talent. One of those legs is hard work. One of those legs is emotional availability and willingness to be vulnerable. And one of those legs, as we now know, is the habitual abuse of power and sexual harassment of people who would have thought of him as a mentor and someone who could help them in their careers. And I can't look past that ivory leg myself on that table. I can't buy that table anymore.
Do you also think that not reading a Sherman Alexie book would change something outside of your mind? But besides aligning with your values, what do you think it would change?
Absolutely. So this is the second part of this conversation that gets a little bit trickier. I feel much better about myself as a consumer not buying Hershey's chocolate, not buying Sherman Alexie books, not sharing links and all of that anymore. But does any of that, you know, do those actions translate to meaningful change on a bigger scope? On the one hand, yes, because Sherman Alexie is a contemporary artist who relies on fans and consumers of his work to continue to be successful. Until he changes his business practices, if people stop supporting him, he's going to be forced into a position where he needs to make changes and choices as a professional.
So this is not about sending a message to the world. Sherman Alexie's no longer a bestseller. You're saying you would be changing Sherman Alexie's personal behavior if he's not selling tons of books?
I mean, here's the thing. There's nuance in this conversation. There is not nuance in dollars. So if you're not supporting the artist's work, knowing that that artist, you know, that that artist was unable to factor into his bottom line as a producer of product to be respectful of other human beings. I'm totally okay with that consequence for him. Now, that is as a consumer. I am also a member of society. I am also a person who's contributing to a dialogue around this. And I can't just walk away from the table, feel good about me, and say, I solved the ivory trade, right? That's not how it works. So as a consumer, I'm not going to support the product anymore. As a person, I have to engage with this problem, because it's the only way it gets solved.
Katie, I'm talking with Katie Anthony here, a local blogger, writer, podcast host. There's a native author, Marionette Pember, who said, I wonder if we removed all the books and art created by men who've also done despicable things in their lives, our shelves and walls would be mighty empty.
Yeah, they absolutely would. And that speaks to a couple of problems. Number one, whose voices we think of as valuable. And I think that's a very serious problem, you know, and particularly with someone like Sherman Alexie, who is, again, very talented and has worked very hard and has also kind of become this monolith in terms of this is the native voice in our contemporary American literature. This is the big one. And we as a culture have to start asking ourselves, what stories do we deserve to be told? Do we think deserve to be told? And what stories do we think deserve to be retold? What stories are we willing to show up for again and again and again? Because if you think about, you know, the traditional narrative of like the guy who lost his wife and now has to, you know, fight his way out of a tight spot, you know, that's The Fugitive, that's Gladiator, that's Braveheart, that's Finding Nemo. That story people think deserve to be told over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so why are we, you know, narrowing down the native voices in this country who have valuable stories to tell to just this one guy? It's incredibly unfair.
What if Sherman, and of course, Sherman is an example, and we're talking about something bigger, but what if Sherman writes next about sexual harassment, even not on the nose, but let's say it's obliquely, artistically, in literature? Would you want to consume that? Would you still want to read his stories?
Well, I think if we're not willing to grow as a culture, then what are we doing here having this conversation? So absolutely. And I really love the segment that you did earlier this week with the two Native artists who had this conversation that was so incredibly insightful. And something that they said really resonated with me, which was that they don't want to cast him out. They want to bring him back in and they want to help him heal his heart. And I think that's the next stage of this conversation. For me, the first step is making these people uncomfortable enough with their choices that they understand that they need to change. And that's not buying the table. That's not buying the book, saying, I don't support your business practice of abusing your power, sexually harassing people, and silencing the voices of younger artists who would look to you as a hero. I don't support that. Stage two is the rehabilitation and the eventually the healing. And that is a long process and a complex process. And
how would you picture that healing happening?
Well, for Sherman Alexie, I am absolutely going to shine the light on the two women who spoke on this program earlier, because there is...
By the way, maybe we should tweet that out, a link, if our listeners want to hear that. We talked to Sarah Marie Ortiz, an Acoma Pueblo writer. We talked to filmmaker Tracy Rector, member of the Choctaw Nation and head of Longhouse Media.
Exactly. This is a messy process. And particularly when we're in an age where intersectionality is a word that more and more of us are familiar with and comfortable using, you know, Sherman Alexie's identity as a Native is incredibly important in terms of how this issue gets resolved for him. And as a reader, as a potential future consumer of his work, I would absolutely trust his own community to resolve this with him in a way that feels just to them.
One of the things I loved about that conversation is that the word love came into it. You know, these writers and people who know Sherman, they have a lot. They have love. They have frustration. They have a sense of justice. There's a lot there. And Katie Anthony, is this hard for you?
It's incredibly, incredibly hard. It is There are so many hard things about it that it's hard. They're racing through my mind right now. It is hard to be disappointed by someone that you've admired, because art is a conversation between the artist and the audience, the listener, the viewer, the reader. There is an intimacy that happens there with artists that you love, that, you know, they help you to see yourself more clearly. And when that person is revealed as someone who's done something that's very hurtful to you, it feels very personal and it's painful.
But why end that conversation that you're talking about? You close that valuable writer out, and are we still having a conversation? Are we listening?
Absolutely, because I'm not supporting him as a consumer anymore, but I am absolutely willing to engage in the conversation around how he can heal himself and how his community can work in this way to engage in their own processes that you know are certainly not my expertise or my wheelhouse.
What about Sherman Alexie library book that he does? It's not a paid read.
Well, that's the thing. That's everyone's choice. I personally am not going to go see the new Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find the movie because I'm done with Johnny Depp. He's ruined for me personally. And, you know, I know the author Claire Dieterer wrote in the Paris Review recently.
Seattle author, yeah.
Yeah. She wrote about how, you know, she's able to watch some Woody Allen movies and enjoy them. And Annie Hall for her is intact as an experience. But Manhattan, kind of icky, she said. And so,
how did you feel about that?
Well, I would not presume to tell any other person about how to have a relationship with their art. I would just, you know, tell anyone who's struggling with this question that you don't need to be afraid of putting your money where your values are. You don't need to be afraid of saying, I don't agree with this and I'm not going to support it anymore. And that there is a distinction between saying, I'm not going to support your art anymore and saying, I'm done with you as a human being. Those are two different things. Now, for most of us, like, I don't know Sherman Alexie personally. I am not, you know, unless I write him a letter, which I certainly could do, you know, my ability to engage with him on this is extremely limited. So as a consumer, I can either buy his books or not. I'm choosing not to. If you choose to do that, that's absolutely fine. On a recent podcast episode, my podcast co-host and I read a comment from one of our listeners. And Ronit, my podcast co-host, said that it was such a brilliant idea. He said if he has to engage in a piece of art that is somehow problematic, that he will engage in it. He'll see the movie. He'll buy the book. He'll read it. And then he will make a greater donation to an organization that is combating that whatever problematic stance was present in the art.
Yeah, that work. Does that work for you?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's kind of like punching someone in the eye and then giving them a foot massage. Like, you should have just not punched him in the eye, you know? That's just me personally. But again, I'm not going to presume to tell anyone else how to interact with their art. Just go into it with open eyes and don't be afraid to say no.
Final question, Katie Anthony. In your blog post about this, Sherman Alexie and the million-dollar question, you say we don't extend the same courtesy to women that we do to men, that if a powerful man behaves badly, we say no one's perfect. If a woman alleges harassment, you say we expect them to be the perfect victim. Is Me Too changing that?
I think
Me Too movement?
I think so. I think we still have, it's still so incredibly early. And when we talk about a massive culture shift, you know, that has to start with a lot of personal accountability. And this is a time of extremes. People are taking extreme points of view. And as we're kind of moving a little bit more toward the middle again, there's this simultaneous fear that we're losing ground. But also this is a natural evolution of this process, that we're going to find more nuance. We're going to find more complexity and contradiction in this process as we move through it. I'm hopeful that, you know, women are not going to have to be perfect victims anymore in order to be heard. You know, every story that comes out is incredibly painful, but the pain was already there. Now we just know about it. And I think that's progress.
That's blogger and podcaster Katie Anthony. The blog is called Katie, Katie, Kate. Her podcast is Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. And she says that as arts consumers, we need to examine our own role in allowing abusive men to behave with impunity. And by the way, your co-host on the podcast, Ronit Plank,
yes,
who you mentioned. Always good to see you again. Thanks for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you for having me.